Welcome into the Towel Boys. I'm Tyler Bischoff over here at Mountain West Connection. He's Mike Grimala over at runrebs.com. UNLV finally got a win. They went and beat New Mexico, kind of a battle of two teams that suck, basically. Two teams that had lost a lot of games. And I think it's like New Mexico's worst losing streak since the 70s or something like that. And obviously for UNLV, they had a – was it a seven-game losing streak earlier this year? Is that what the total
UNLV,
was?
They lost six out of seven at one point, and they had lost
six out
three
of
out of four going into New Mexico.
Okay, so they didn't quite string together seven straight, but okay. But yeah, two teams, yeah, basically a lot of people writing before was, hey, these two teams are normally good, they suck this season. UNLV able to go on the road and get the win. Biggest thing I took from that was the first 8 or 9 minutes. I'm more convinced. I've kind of been questioning it, weighing it, but I think I'm convinced now that UNLV would be better if they played a higher pressure defense, tried to get some steals, tried to get some fast breaks, even if it means they give up some free layups. I'm convinced they'd be better because the way they were able to run in the first 8 or 9 minutes of that game was as good of an offensive team as I think they can be without Rashad Bond.
It's no doubt that their transition offense is much better than their half-court offense. I think that's obvious for anyone to see. McCaw is obviously really good in transition. You got two bigs who can run the floor. And you know, even Kendrick is coming on now in transition and making some plays.
He made an awesome pass.
The over-the-shoulder drop-off.
Yeah. If you on the replay that was like straight under the basket, he kind of gave a glance behind, took another dribble, and then it was great.
Yeah, it was sort of the same, almost a similar situation to the one he laid off the glass for Wood. Yes. in the previous game. You know, Wood was the trailer, and there was some debris around the rim, some defenders, so he sort of laid it off the glass. This time he sort of drew the defenders and then just dipped it over the shoulder. It was a nice play.
But I mean, he's been good. Pat McCaw's obviously been awesome, even though he took a three in a 1-on-4 transition situation and made it. Not exactly the best shot, but hey, he made it, so it's not terrible. And I don't know, is Pat McCaw taking an open three in transition better than
probably
setting up half-court offense?
Probably.
Okay. I was kind of thinking, yeah, there's a good chance it is. But part of the reason that I think, hey, they'd be better if they played this high-pressure thing or high-pressure defense is not so much because UNLV was getting steals against New Mexico. A lot of their breaks in that first half came off of block shots. And if you play that higher-pressure defense, you're going to give up lanes to the basket, and you know it creates more opportunities for Wood or Okunoba to block a shot, and that's... It's weird to say. I'm saying it's a good thing if your guys get beat off the dribble and you have to have help side defenders block the shot, but that's how they started some of their breaks. If you play the higher pressure defense, that's going to happen more often. The biggest worry, I think, would be, and we've seen this in quite a few games, Utah was the most memorable to me, was first half, Okunoba or Wood is dominating inside, and the other team is not getting layups off. They're getting swatted. But in the second half, and I haven't really figured out what it is, but teams figure something out, and they stop getting their shots blocked, and they start getting those layups either over or around Wood and Okunoba, and they're starting to score them more. So I think that would be a worry, that it seems like teams, after they play for 20 minutes, kind of figure out, okay, this is how we score against these shot blockers inside.
Yeah, and I think that's natural. I mean, if you're coming into most of these college basketball games, especially the out-of-conference games, you're not really... You know, you may have never even seen, you know, Okunoba or Wood before, and then, you know, you get your shot blocked a couple times, you start to realize, you can see it on the scouting report that these guys block a lot of shots, but until they send yours back a few times, do you really understand that, hey, I can't just go straight up, I've got to, you know, pump fake, or I've got to go up to the up and under to the other side of the rim, or I've got to do something to shield him. So, I mean, I think that's natural. And then speaking to the, you know, getting out in transition more, yeah, I mean, I'm not so sure they were doing anything differently on defense to create those transition opportunities. I think it just maybe just sort of happened within the flow of the game. I don't know. Is that something? It's not something they can do this year with this personnel.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't know. Maybe just send Pat McCaw on a one-man press. just let him pressure whoever the hell has the ball and try to get steals.
But the problem you run into is that you need him to play 35 minutes a night.
Yeah, whatever. You get 2 days off between games minimum. Let's do it. It's tough with seven guys. They always look better, and I know there'd be some bad consequences for it, but I just feel like they'd be better because offensively in conference play, they were good against New Mexico and they were good against Air Force, but most of the time in conference play, they have not been good. In non-conference play, they weren't good on the offensive end. In conference play, they haven't looked good, but their numbers have been okay. I think they'd be better off if they went to that and they'd get a couple more seals and maybe help their defensive confidence. Now, both coaches got teed up. I didn't see it anywhere officially, but Dave Rice's first technical foul is what is widely assumed from that. What did Dave Rice do to get the technical?
I'm not sure what he did that would warrant a technical. Maybe it was something we didn't see on TV, on the replay. Something off camera maybe, but I'm not sure. I wasn't there. I didn't get a chance to talk to him after the game and ask him about it, so I'm not exactly sure what the exact trigger was to get the technical.
CBS Sports didn't show a great replay of what Dave Rice did right before. They showed him afterwards, and then when they showed a replay, it was him still after he'd gotten the technical, like asking for a hit on the arm. If you saw, as New Mexico was bringing the ball up, Dave Rice had come like to the 3-point line, which he typically does, to yell at the ref. And that's the only thing I can think is he gave him a T because Dave Rice was like on the court and ready to play, basically, which we see a lot from him. But that's the only thing I really got from him. That's the only thing I watched and saw. Okay, maybe that's why he got a technical foul because. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like Dave Rice is the coach to have said, you know, a magic cuss word to the referee in the middle of complaining to get it.
If I had to guess, I would say it would probably be the combination of just he was probably arguing strongly while being, you know, so far out onto the court, maybe. But if you're going to start giving Dave Rice technicals for being out on the court, then Stacey Augmon is going to have to get ready for a lot of face time, a lot of coaching this year because Rice is not going to finish out many games if they start calling those technical fouls because he's out on the court all the time. It was probably just a lot of arguing. Maybe the ref told him to shut up and he kept going and he tried to get a last word in. I know some refs are very sensitive to that. When they say it's over, they want it to be over. I don't know, but it seemed to work. I mean, Jalon Kendrick had a quote after the game that said, you know, sort of fired the team up and it made them want to play harder. So I don't know, maybe there's a strategic technical idea for us.
Dave Rice is going to start getting technical in every game. UNLV goes down by five. Here comes Dave Rice.
Is he going to try and get those technicals after a made basket by UNLV? the latest controversy that's sweeping UNLV basketball.
That is a tremendous transition, Mike, into Dave Rice calling timeouts after. Don't put gate at the end of it. I'm going to smack you. Calling timeouts after made shots, and specifically after made threes, even though I don't think he specifically does it after threes. I think he's just doing it after makes. Taylor Byrne, who covers the team for the Las Vegas Sun, has tweeted a lot about it the last month or so, about him doing it. A lot of people questioning it, a lot of people confused about it. What do you make of it?
Not much. The defense is not good. His reasoning is that, you know, they score a basket. The quickest way to lose momentum after a made basket is to give up a made basket. So I guess, you know, when they hit a big shot or something that he feels like can swing momentum, he wants to get his defense set or, you know, and sort of impart that to the team, like, hey, we need to stop here. So, I mean, the reasoning, I guess, is sound. It's a timeout. I mean, it's not going to – I don't see it like altering the game one way or the other, but it has been like an issue on social media. I've heard people talking about it. Like some people don't really like it.
I would be interested to see what teams are shooting, what they're scoring out of those timeouts against UNLV. Just because, like you said, they haven't been a good defensive team in conference play. They weren't particularly good against New Mexico. They weren't bad, but they weren't good either. I don't know. I'm not a big believer in momentum and whatever all that, but I do feel like this team would play better defensively after they coming off a make, after they're coming off a big shot, less so than they would coming out of a timeout.
I don't know. It's tough to tell either way. I mean, how many times total has it happened all year? Like, maybe 10 times he's done this, dozen times? Like, you can't tell anything from a sample size that small. If they give up eight defensive baskets after that, I mean, it's going to look bad, but it's happened so few times in the grand scheme of things that it's not – I can't really see it moving the needle much one way or the other. I know that's not – it doesn't make for good radio or good podcasting to take that stance. I can take a hotter stance if you would like. I can say it's the worst coaching decision of all time, and the next time Dave Rice does it –
it is a fireable offense.
Yeah, fireable. Next time he takes a timeout after a made basket, he's got to go.
Like, early in the year, I can remember him, you know, kind of like in the final minute, if UNLV scored in a close game, he'd call a timeout before – going on defense, and I think he even said something post game or maybe in a weekly press conference thing about, like, you know, I like to take my timeouts before we go on defense, not so much before we go on offense. And basically he's just taking that reasoning in the final minute and extending it to the whole game.
Yeah, he said his philosophy was towards the end of games, he wants his offense to just go. He doesn't want to, he thinks it's an advantage when there's a timeout, he thinks the defense has a greater advantage than the offense. You know, the offense can set up, you know, a play, but he thinks the defense gains more of an advantage by being set after a timeout. So at the end of games, he wants his offense, if they get a rebound or after a basket, he wants them to just go and not give the defense of the other team as much time to set up. So I think he applies that to his own team. You know, he'd rather use those timeouts to get his defense set than to call a play on offense. The only time I can see being an issue is if it's, you know, your last timeout, or it's an end-of-game situation where you're trying to manage your timeouts, and if you take one after a made basket when you don't necessarily need it, I could see that being an issue. But other than that, I mean, how many – you get so many timeouts, you got to use – you want to use them. If he wasn't using these timeouts, the people would be upset about that. So,
What, Mike? Are you saying Dave Rice can't win?
I don't know. I think if you're going to criticize Dave Rice, there are other – things that would probably come in ahead of calling timeouts after a made basket.
Here, there's been a lot of talk this year about college basketball and how it's not as fun or not watchable. That's the key phrase there. That's the hot term, unwatchable college basketball. And, you know, whatever, scoring is down. I don't care too much about scoring being down, but I wish they would, like, take timeouts away or like, coaches can't call timeouts in the last minute or something, or they're only have 30-second timeouts, whatever. I don't like timeouts in general. Like, I like watching basketball when there's no breaks, when it's just, here we go, up and down the court. But we still, what do they get, 5 timeouts, 6 timeouts? What is it in college basketball? I think it's 5.
And then you also have the TV timeouts, which are the worst. I mean, it's when people say, like, Dave Rice is breaking momentum by taking these timeouts after a basket – like, there's no, you're not going to get momentum in college basketball anyway. Like, you can't play more than a few possessions without some stoppage of play, whether it's a coach calling timeout or a TV timeout or a review of a play or something like that. I mean, there's no momentum. It is hard to watch in some games. It's a lot of fouling, especially after they tightened up on perimeter defense a couple years ago. And then you just get all the timeouts. It can be hard to watch.
If there was one rule that I think they could put in and that everybody would agree with, would be take away back-to-back timeouts. You can't call a second timeout if time hasn't run off the clock since the last timeout.
The same team, or what?
Any team. If there was a media timeout, if there's a coach calling a timeout, time has to come off the clock before you can take another timeout.
I mean, I don't think coaches would go for it just because you have situations.
Well, yeah. I don't care. Coaches want they would take like 12 timeouts. I'm talking about like the NCAA fans. Like, I think anybody watching the game besides the coaches would take that.
Agreed. Like watching a game, I would give coaches two timeouts for the game. I mean, you really only need them in the final minute if you're trying to set something up. The rest of the time, you have TV timeouts. That's what they're there for. So you have a built-in stoppages to get your team, you know, settled or whatever. There's 100 things you can do to make college basketball better. Timeouts being one of them.
But yeah, take away timeouts. If we just take them all away, keep the media timeouts. Give you your break every 4 minutes, but take away coaches' timeouts, and I'll be
give
happy.
Them one. Give them one for the final minutes.
Okay, I can agree to that. Against New Mexico, defensively, if you look at the points per possession numbers, not really UNLV's defense is kind of average against New Mexico because New Mexico is not a great offensive team. They can't shoot the ball, but not a bad performance. I thought watching it, the only two major issues for the UNLV defense in that game was guarding Hugh Greenwood coming off of screens. I thought he got some shots, and then also UNLV overhelped onto him, which created some other shots for other guys. But I thought that was the major problem. The second one was a jet. I thought he gave UNLV some issues, and we've seen that with David Collette, J.J. Avila, big guys that have given UNLV problems inside. But really, nothing major there. Hugh Greenwood's a pretty good player coming off of screens. A Jet's not a great player. I think he had a career high in points at like 13. But defensively, did you see anything that you thought, okay, this is still a terrible defensive team?
They looked fine, but the issue it's tough to take too much away from it because, like you said, New Mexico can't shoot, and when teams can't shoot, it changes so much of the offense that it's like the single biggest factor in making a team easy to defend when you can't shoot. So I saw UNLV sort of playing closer to the lane. They've had problems with penetration, I think, at times this year, but they really did a pretty good job against New Mexico. But a lot of that, I think, is because they can't shoot, and UNLV really didn't have to respect that.
All right, I'm going to give you two stat lines. You tell me what you think of them. First one, Dwayne Morgan, 13 minutes, 2 points, 4 fouls, and UNLV was outscored by 8 while he was on the floor.
It's not good enough. It's not good enough. They need, if you, I wrote this in my story after the game, but if you're going to be a team that's down to 7 players, you can't afford to have a non-contributor on the team, like playing minutes in the rotation. Like they need everyone to contribute something.
In that game, he added one thing, and that was fouls. Like, I think he grabbed 3 rebounds, so that's okay. He didn't kill the team there, but what does Dwayne Morgan add to this team?
The thing that he should be adding to the team is rebounding. I mean, Rice has made that clear all season. I think he's tried to get that into Morgan's head through practice. I think he's tried to do it through the media. I think every chance he's gotten when he's talking about Morgan, he's sort of thrown in a comment about him, them needing him as a rebounder in the front court. I know he's a little bit undersized as a power forward, but I mean, he should be a better rebounder. He's not. That would be the best way for it, the easiest way for him to get minutes and to play more, which I assume he wants. I assume he wants to play more. Is just to get rebounds and get defensive rebounds. He hasn't done a good job of that this year. And then when you throw in, looking last night, I think in the past 7 games or the past 6 games, he's hit 5 of 30 shots from the field, 16%.
Ooh, that is excellent.
So he's not scoring, to say the least. So he's not bringing anything on the offensive end. He can be a good defender. You're going to have to wait until next year to find out because he's just too foul prone this year, and that's not going to change now. It's something that's going to have to change next year. But rebounding is something that can change and something that he really could contribute to this team. I don't know how they get him to do that.
We saw Rashad Vaughn become a good rebounder in the middle of the season. He went from grabbing like 2 a game to up to like 6 and 7 a lot until he got hurt. All right, second stat line, Cody Doolin. We've talked about this before, but Cody Doolin, 0 points, 0-for-1 from the floor.
Also not good enough. He's got to contribute something offensively as a shooter. He should be taking. There should be a way to get him more than one shot per game, especially with your leading scorer out for the season. Patrick McCaw, I understand, has been stepping up and taking on more of the ball handling and more of the scoring responsibility, so the ball is not in Doolin's hands as much. But, I mean, did you see opportunities for him to get more involved in the offense in terms of finishing plays or getting to open spots and maybe finding openings to get a shot off?
See, in that game against New Mexico, I did not think Cody Doolin going 0 for 1 or only shooting one shot was a big deal, because when Cody Doolin tried to penetrate, New Mexico was still sending a help defender to cut him off. I mean, UNLV got a handful of open shots because Doolin would get two steps inside the arc.
He did finish with, what, six assists?
Yeah, he had six assists. And he'd get two steps within the arc, and New Mexico sent a second defender at him. And at one point, the announcers said, well, I think they highlighted it coming back from commercial, like, why are you helping off of Jalon Kendrick, who's already hit two threes, onto Cody Doolin, who's not going to shoot the ball? And, like, in situations like that, I had no problem with Cody Doolin shooting the ball once, because when he drove, New Mexico was still sending a second guy at him. And when teams do that, I don't care if Cody Doolin shoots. If they send a second guy at him, Cody Doolin, pass it to Pat McCaw or Jalon Kendrick or Jordan Cornish and let them shoot. Like, that's fine with me. The problem has been when teams aren't helping off of him, or when he's standing at the, you know, like 5 feet behind the three-point line, not really doing much, just hoping to get the ball back and, I don't know, reverse it. That's where the problem comes in with Cody Doolin not doing enough offensively. But in that game, I had no problem with it, because New Mexico, for some reason, was still saying, hey, we're going to send the second guy at you.
No, yeah, I get that. I mean, it's not like he wasn't involved in the offense. He was, you know, making things happen. But all season long, I wanted him to shoot more. I love 3-point shooters. And he's a good 3-point shooter. I feel like he could make an impact if he were able to find some openings and be a little more aggressive in looking for a shot.
All right, I'm going to give you one more. Jalon Kendrick, 17 points, 5 of 9 shooting, 7 assists.
Love it.
He is the blank best player on this team. With Rashad Vonna. He's out of the 7 that are playing.
Probably go number 3. I mean, do you get
really?
Wood, McCaw?
Yeah, I mean, those are the clear-cut 1 and 2. Do you put him above Okonobo because of what Okonobo can do defensively?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think I kind of agree. The only hesitance I have is, like, you know, he had, like, what, 15 against Air Force and then scored, like, 5 total points the next 2 games and then goes for 17 against New Mexico. So we're not seeing him score, like, 9, 10 points every game. It's kind of, you know, here's 2 points, here's 15 for you. But, I think he's been really good recently, and I think I almost agree with you that he's their third best player, which is probably not a good thing.
I mean, since they took him out of the starting lineup the first time after that, the San Diego State game, they lost at San Diego State. I mean, since that he had a really bad game. Since then, he's been playing great. The scoring is up and down, but I mean, he's had some quality scoring games. His shooting percentages are high. The assists have been pretty consistent since then, you know, at least, you know, 3, 4, 5 every game. And then he's playing really good defense, in my opinion. I would take him over. In terms of how they're playing right now, the past month, I think Kendrick is probably the third best player.
He's shooting less than 2 threes a game this year, but the last 10 games, he's made 44% of his threes.
There you go. And you like them in transition, and I think he's been a key guy in getting them into transition more. It's when he gets, after a defensive rebound, it looks like Kendrick is getting his hands on the ball more in terms of bringing it up the court, and he's a guy who will push it up the court and actually try to make something happen before the defense gets set, which I don't think Cody Doolin is always aggressively trying to do. I think McCaw and Kendrick are your two guys if you want the ball to be, you know, pushed up the court quickly and then, you know, seeking out a shot before the defense is ready. I think McCaw and Kendrick has been good at that as well.
So Jalon Kendrick, third option. He's going to be the C guy on a Mountain West championship run.
I don't know if he's
going right?
to score as your third option every night, but he's. If you ask me straight up, I would say he's probably their third best player right now.
he's up to 4.8 assists per game the last five.
That's good.
So he's been really good for them, and he's not just made good plays in transition. He's made some oh, that's a really nice play that I want to see the replay of six times. Okay, all right. Moving on to some more stats, actually. But something that's been really weird and kind of a season-long trend is Pat McCaw. All of his best scoring performances have been on the road. So five times this year, he scored 15 or more points, all on the road. Yesterday against New Mexico was actually the first time UNLV won a game where Pat McCaw scored 15 points or more. And the big reason has been his shooting. At home, he's shooting 33% from the floor and 26% from three. On the road, he's 51% from the floor and 48% from three. And so he's averaging 13.7 points at home, 7.2 on the road. All of his other numbers, rebounds, assists, steals, turnovers, free throw percentage, they're all basically the same, home or away. But his field goal percentage and his points per game are significant, I mean, almost double when he's away from Thomas and Mack. And I don't know what to do with that.
I think you have to, if you're UNLV, you have to try and build a new arena by next year. If he doesn't like it in the Thomas and Mack, you've got to do something to get a new arena in place by the time next year starts, because it looks
like every game at the Orleans.
Yeah, if McCaw is going to be their number one option next year. I mean, he's going to be the cornerstone of the franchise, of the program for the next 2-3 years, whatever it takes to make him happy. I say start building it now. If you break ground tomorrow, you may be able to open it by the start of next year.
Does Pat McCaw get to sit in with the architect?
I'd put his name on the arena if it was up to me.
Does he get a statue? Statues are a big deal. We'll go name on the arena for now. He's got to do something more special for a
name
statue.
Name on the arena, name on the court. And you can build in a little courtyard for you where you can erect the statue after he's gone.
He's going to go off against Utah State now, just because he's good on the road. I'm convinced he's just going to go off on the road. They're not going to win the Mountain West tournament because they're at home, because Pat McCaw's not good.
Ooh, on the contrary, those are not home games. That's a neutral court setting. They actually bring in a neutral court. They bring in the Mountain West court with the Mountain West logo. They replace the Thomas and Mack court.
So is it the court? Is it the actual court, or is it the arena? Listen, if he goes off in the Mountain West tournament, we don't have to build the new arena. We just got to put new floor.
I'm trying to think if they bring in baskets as well. I can't remember if they actually bring in new baskets.
Surely they don't bring in new baskets. Maybe they just replace the padding and stuff.
Yeah. But
surely that's more financially feasible or logical, whatever. Okay, so Pat McCaw sucks at home. That's why UNLV's lost so many home games. We're blaming Pat McCaw here, not Dwayne Morgan or anybody else. It's Pat McCaw's fault. All right, I want to go back to the Boise State game. 53-48 was the final score. A lot of complaining from people about that game being hard to watch. I think I'm the only person that enjoyed it. And here's why I enjoyed it. It's because I like the strategical part of basketball, or I like the analytical, strategical, whatever you want to call it. I like that part of basketball. Derek Marks is really good offensively. He's really good on the pick and roll. And UNLV completely shut him down. I mean, he had an awful game. Boise State had its worst points per possession of the season, and I was fascinated by the way UNLV's defense was. I mean, they switched every screen and still were able to cut off Derek Marks. And to me, that was interesting, and I enjoyed watching that. Even if nobody was making shots, I still enjoyed watching that. And I know a lot of people, I mean, listen, I like to see made shots too. The game would have been better if there were made shots, but I still enjoyed it. And a lot of people don't watch it that way, and I understand that, but I don't know. I liked a 53-48.
The counter would be that watching UNLV, their strategy on defending Derek Marks, he's a great player, the way they defend him, is an interesting wrinkle in the game. It doesn't make an interesting game.
To me, it made an interesting game.
It's an interesting part of a game when the game itself was not very interesting. I mean, it's tough to spin 1 of 20 from three-point range, for both teams into well played basketball.
And I'm not saying it was well played. I'm saying I was intrigued by Dave Rice saying, "Hey, we're going to switch everything," and Derek Marks being essentially rendered useless. I mean, he shot terribly. He had a couple, he had a good crossover in the second half on Pat McCaw, but I mean, Derek Marks was awful in that game, and he's been the best player. And so I don't know. That to me, that made it an interesting game, even though you say it was just part of it. To me, that made it. I was interested the entire game. The other thing is, I don't know how. Okay, I do know, but I don't understand how anybody could go into that game after watching it blame Dave Rice. Like, they held the most efficient offense in the Mountain West to, like, 0.65 points per possession. Like, not even close to their second lowest outing in terms of efficiency. And it was because of Dave Rice's defensive strategy. And yet, after the game, people were still saying Dave Rice is a terrible coach. Now, the offense sucked, yes. But defensively, I mean, Dave Rice, not because he has good defenders, Dave Rice put in a strategy that just took away the best player in this conference, and people still were yelling at him after the game. The reason, though, and I've kind of gathered this from people that I've heard just casually watch UNLV basketball, they don't think Boise State's good, even though Boise State is good this year. Like, they just assume Boise State's bad, and they don't have any good players. So I think that's where a lot of that was coming from after the Boise State game, but I still know a lot of people on Twitter that know Boise State's good. We're still mad at Dave Rice after that game.
No, I agree. I didn't expect them to do that good of a job on Marks. But yeah, Rice has to get the credit for that. They did some things to slow him down. Rice gets the credit. And I mean, it's not exciting to say, but I mean, UNLV made 1 of 20 from 3-point range. I mean, he can't make the shot. He can't go out. Well, he can go out onto the court, but he can't make the shots for the team. You know, it's a make or miss game. If they make 7 out of 20, they win. But they only made 1 out of 20, so they lost. The defense was what Rice's the biggest impact he had on the game was the defense that he put in to try and slow down that offense, and they did it. I mean, I don't think that game can be used if you're putting together a file of evidence against Dave Rice. I don't think you can really put that game into it.
What has to happen for Dave Rice to get fired?
It's not going to happen after this year. Obviously, he just signed the extension in the offseason. I think if next year is similar to this year, meaning they're above 500, but above 500 overall, around 500 in the conference, missed the NCAA tournament. I don't think he would get fired after that, but I think the seat would start to get hot, and then you'd see probably 2016-17 being the prove it or you're gone season.
See, I think the problem when it comes to, hey, we should fire Dave Rice, is even though the record's not good and they've lost a lot of games, they haven't, gotten blown out. Like, they're not losing by 28 to San Diego State. You know, they've been in these games. It's not like they're, if you added it up, I'm sure they're, 12, 13 points away from, having 6 more wins in conference play or something like that. Like, that's the problem when you say fire Dave Rice. It's not that they're getting killed. Like, they're in these games. They're doing good things. You see potential. You see Pat McCaw, and you're like, well, damn. But it still comes down to wins and losses, and he hasn't won enough this season. And he's not getting fired this year. I mean, it'd have to have something, I think, off the court happen for him to get fired this year. But it's hard, I think, if you're making that decision to fire him, because, you're not looking at blowout losses at home to Boise State or to San Diego State on the road or whatever. You're looking at, hey, they had a chance to win and they didn't. So maybe that's a good thing going forward for a young team. So I don't know. That's why I think it's certainly not black and white, but some people like to make it.
What if next year is similar to this season? Which I think it has a very good chance to be, assuming Rashad Vaughn and Chris Wood leave. It could end up looking pretty much the same as this year.
Yeah, I think then it it's maybe a question at the end of the year. I mean, if they're, what are they right now? 14-12, 15-12. If, you know, if they're a couple games over 500 at the end of next year and really don't have any shot at the NCAA tournament like they don't this year, yeah, I think it could happen. But, you know, again, even they're going to be a young team next year. Like, as much as we talk about them being young right now, they're going to be young again next year. Like, who, there's no juniors on this team. You're not going to have a senior next year that's been in the program. They might get a transfer or something, but there's not going to be a senior next year that's been at UNLV. If Chris Wood comes back, he'll be a junior, but is Chris Wood a leader? I don't think anybody would necessarily say that. So they're going to be young again next year. There's a good chance they lose close games late. But I don't think they'll lose. If they're in this many close games in conference play next year, I don't think they lose them all. Like, they've won what? One against Utah State where it was like final minute, you've got a chance to win on this possession?
Yeah, they won the Utah State game in overtime. I'm looking through the schedule now. Yeah, that's their only...
They did it in non-conference play, but in conference play they're like 1-7 in those situations.
Yeah.
So, they might lose a lot next year, but I feel like if they're put in eight games where it's final minute, they'll go like 4-4 next year in those, and the record will be better just because of that.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's going to be young again. It's going to be these same freshmen or are going to be sophomores. Seegers, I would assume, would be the starting point guard.
Would he be a senior?
Yeah,
next
and year? Which is good. He's been impressive in practice, and I guess the good thing is that unlike Doolin, who just sort of had to come in and play this year, Seegers has had a chance to redshirt and, you know, play and practice with the team and all that stuff. So I mean, Seegers, Ben Carter has looked good. I mean, he's a guy who's played a lot, so I mean, he's got some experience. But it's mostly going to be these same guys. It's going to be McCaw. It's going to be Cornish. It's going to be Morgan. Those are the guys that are going to have to take like huge steps forward, or else it's going to probably look like this year. You know, where it's still learning and trying to get over the hump and trying to figure out how to be consistent. So I don't know. I think if next year is much like this one, I don't think he'll be gone after next year. But I think then the year after that becomes, hey, now you said this was your plan to, you know, hit the reset button, as he likes to say, with a freshman class. And now when those guys start to mature and become, you know, juniors and upperclassmen, that's when it's results time.
I think there's going to be a lot of excitement about Ben Carter going into next season.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the thing Dave Rice is going to pump out as like, hey, we're excited about Ben Carter. And I think that's what a lot of the preseason stories are going to be about, is Ben Carter.
Yeah, homegrown guy. A lot of people have wanted him to stay here instead of going up to Oregon. But and then he's looked good. I mean, you've seen the practices. Rice likes to mentions Carter pretty frequently. Just how his effort and his rebounding and how he wishes he had him this year. So yeah, Ben Carter, I think, is someone people are going to get excited about. I mean, this might be better for one of our off-season podcast. Looking forward to next year, but
we will do a whole half hour on Ben Carter.
Sure, I'm down.
We'll start. You got to start taking notes at practice on Ben Carter and what he's doing. So, okay, all right. Anything else, Mike?
No, I mean, we've already gone out to 2016-17. So I mean, I think that's pretty good for today's podcast.
Do we need to rein it back in? Do we need to? What sophomores are they targeting, Mike?
High school sophomores.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or should we move down to eighth grade? What is it? Sixth graders. Put in sixth graders? Yeah, that's terrifying. God, I hate recruiting. Okay. All right. Mike, you covered recruiting. Tell me why I should not hate it.
I mean, a lot of those people are not the slimy, you know, sleazy grassroots, you know, handlers that you hear about, you know, in the shadier cases. A lot of them are good people who are like donating their time and they really care about the kids and they just, you know, they want to run a basketball program that can, you know, sort of help kids get more exposure and help them, you know, find their way to college or, you know, whatever. A lot of them are good people. So, I mean,
God, recruiting is important, but I just tell me who they got and where their class is ranked. And that's all I need to know. I don't need to know everything else. I don't need to know when somebody's coming on a visit. I don't care. It's like a reality TV show, whatever. All right. Well, we'll talk about that in the offseason too, recruiting and how I think it's stupid. But Anyway, he's Mike Gamala over at runrefs.com. I'm Tyler Bischoff here at Mountain West Connection. Thanks for tuning in to the Powell Boys.